I'm going to open the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. It's going to open our informational meeting. You'll notice right now there's not very many of us here. That's because the floor session ended really late, so people are eating and then they'll be down. For the most part, a few people have other meetings as well. So let's get into our discussion about mining in Southern Oregon and ask Carol, Dennis, Les, and Bob to come up, please. Welcome to the legislature. Don't bite. Don't get nervous about us at all. And Dennis, whoever, are you going first?
Yes.
Yeah. So the only rule we really have is just before you start, if you can say your name, so the microphone can have it for the listening audience. Other than that, we're not a particularly formal group here.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. I want to greet the co-chairs Callen and Clem and the committee. My name is Dennis Dixon from Josephine County. We're here to report on mining opportunities for Oregon's economy. And we have with us Robert Stumbo of Josephine County and Les Berg of Deschutes County. And Les Berg's beautiful bride, and she's got the gold.
Oh, yeah, she does.
She's not going to say anything. She's just going to look pretty.
Kind of like me, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me present our opening comments. If we could get Chrissy to put this map up on the big screen for us. What we have here is a report from the Southern Oregon Resource Alliance that we're going to leave with the committee with a PowerPoint. We don't have time to present the entire presentation. But what we want to show to you is one of these wilderness subsites really includes about 1,500 mining locations according to Dogami report. So some of these things that could be economically viable for our future generations are in great danger of being taken out of the public reach. And we just wanted to point that out and leave this with you. You have a copy, and we'll leave an electronic copy that any of you can use in any committee reports that you'd like to. And again, this is from the Southern Oregon Resource Alliance. So we'd like to submit that to you. And then I'd like to read a report from our Josephine County Sheriff's Office. Sheriff Gil Gilbertson was going to come, but he's protecting our citizens, so he deputized me to read this to you. He said to the House Agriculture and Natural Resource Committee from Gil Gilbertson, land uses issues in Josephine County. I was asked today to provide a short message regarding my concerns on the proposed land use issue. Given such a short notice of this presentation, my recommendation would be to divert this project to a holding pattern till all aspects and impacts are thoroughly vetted, questions asked and answered. There are many factors needing attention, such as proper assessment of the lands in question, their composition in terms of value as agricultural, timber, or minerals. The conflicting FLIPMA and other federal rules and regulations should be addressed. False science is often applied. These lands are not pristine, untouched by humans. Proper ownership of the lands regarding time of statehood, vote of the people at that time, equal footing doctrine, ORS regarding forests within a county jurisdiction must be voted upon. Safety of individuals within the area is closed off in terms of criminal activity, life-threatening responses, firefighting equipment, etc. I will share this with you. After expressing my concerns regarding safety of people within these areas, I was provided two keys, one from the United States Forest Service, the other from the Bureau of Land Management. Wouldn't you know that the very first gate I came to, neither key allowed me access. If I were alive, lost because we were denied access, the liability would be huge. I am concerned that rushing into any financial decisions or any final decisions may cause irreparable harm to the citizens of Josephine County and the generations to follow. I would enjoy the opportunity to work closely with the committee and provide input at some time in the future on the many issues that I feel are germane to this issue. I'd like to submit this. Also, if I may, I want to step with the committee's indulgence to this map. This map was provided by Sheriff Gilbertson. He sent me to point out to you that this whole area that they're considering to lock up in this wilderness proposal and ONC land trades and various issues would not only lock up over 90% of the mineral wealth of southern Oregon, Josephine County. And you go to Dagami's website, there's over 1,500 documented mines in this area. But the other point he wanted to make is this is a pre-FLIPMA map, and there's roads all over out in this supposed wilderness area that our county sheriff needs access to protect the citizens and provide access for firefighting, things like that. And he wanted to submit this to the public record that these roads have been erased on current new maps, but they're still there on the ground. If you go down, and Sheriff Gilbertson said if anyone from the committee would like to come down and we'd be glad to show you these in person where you can get more information directly. So that's his report. One more report. Jim Rodney, PhD geologist, asked for me to submit this. He was not able to attend. This is from James D. Rodney, PhD, certified engineering geologist. He wrote, thank you for the opportunity to present some thoughts regarding the mining opportunities and challenges currently within Oregon. Our state is known to have many valuable mineral deposits. However, Oregon is regarded by the mining community as being unfavorably inclined toward mining projects. By way of introduction, I am an Oregon certified engineering geologist and have been since 1978. My wife and I own and operate part-time a small gravel operation that carries byproduct gold known as the Steam Bear Mine. The property was founded by the group in the 1870s, which included a brewer from Roseburg, Oregon, thus the mine name. Much of my time is occupied by consulting within the field of engineering geology and mining geology. By education, I've studied civil engineering, mining engineering, general and engineering geology. My father was a building contractor. Working with him as a young man gave me lots of hands-on experience, enabling me to earn a general and several specialty contractor's license. My college education was concluded upon conference of a PhD in engineering geology from Stanford University. My most professional life has been spent either as a consultant or as a business owner. I have visited many mines and mining operations from South America to Alaska. Further experience and education has qualified me to produce disclosure documents for the Toronto Stock Exchange. I have great concern for the current erosion of personal rights with concurrent increases in governmental controls. The controls appear to be promoted under the veil of, quote, public good. The cost of the, quote, control is paid for by the public, but the benefit is shared by a few. The rights of many citizens are trampled in order to benefit the few. An example of how difficult
it's three pages, we have it. I don't want you to read the whole thing because we want to interact with you and ask you questions.
All right. Lead on.
Well, no, you can finish. If you've got more of your thoughts.
The point that he has here.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you helping us to give this report. This is just a personal note. This is an example, and I've personally been to this mine myself and seen this. This is an example of how difficult it is to get a project permit approved in Oregon. Let me tell you about a client in Douglas County. He's an experienced. He experienced a rapid fluid landslide called a debris flow in 2004. The debris flow originated from a steep hillside above his approved and operating rock quarry, taking about 600 feet of railroad line before covering about 8 acres of a neighboring farmer's field. A year after the event, the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration, MSHA, approved a plan to reopen, as did Dogami. And he says there's litigation between the client railroad and the farmer. And he said, in other words, and long story short, when I went and watched this man weep at his mine, he's tried for 10 years. They had a dirt slide rained up there in Douglas County, and the mud slid down off the hill on the railroad track, and it put this miner out of business. I saw him weep. He said, I've provided income here in Douglas County for generations of my family. And he literally wept. I stood in his office, and he wept As he said, Dogami and M. Shawnees have shut me down and taken this business out of the public domain. So all Jim Rohde is trying to bring to our attention to the committee is that these are some issues that really help turn the tide of economic growth in Oregon. If we could get this turned around and make recovered mineral wealth a more viable effort. So that's my report for them. And the last thing I'd like to point out is just on the February 17th, this come off of Peter DeFazio's website, and they're talking about closing down Graves Creek and some of these other creeks that's in this area and turning it into a wilderness. And those have homes where you see some of those red circles. Those are literally private land with ranches and people living in that area. So some of these things they're proposing is absolutely beyond any Wilderness Act, beyond anything at all, and we'd like to bring that to attention to this committee. And with that, I turn it over to Mr. Les Berg of Deschutes County.
Co-Chair Esquivel and Co-Chair Clem, my name is Les Berg. I am one of the owners of Joby Wholesale. We distribute for Garrett Metal Detectors, First Texas Products, and Tesoro Metal Detectors to dealers across the United States. We manufacture recreational prospecting equipment. My gold pans and classifiers are all made by a mold injection company in Drain, Oregon, and you all have an example of them. And you notice the inscription on the back, it's so well taken by the prospectors around the country, made in the good old USA. I'm a native Oregonian who has had the pleasure of living here in the best state, and I can say that with confidence. I have traveled this land coast to coast. We are outside recreational people. We love to fish and fish. We want to have the opportunity to keep on doing what we've earned the right to do. I have traveled this country with the Gold Prospectors Association. If you've seen that TV show, you know what I'm talking about, the two brothers the gold show.
My dad.
At those gold shows, I've done lectures on detectors, how they work, and so forth. And I've seen what I would call a groundswell of concern with our mining rights along with land rights. We belong to several organizations which are fighting the fight to keep us out there. I'm glad to have this opportunity to speak to you on what I believe is a problem which has solutions.
Yes.
We have 30-plus dealers here in Oregon, and Bob Stumbo is one of them in Grants Pass. They have all faced difficulties in moving forward. There are several who have given up their dreams of owning a piece of that American dream and an independent business owner, as an independent business owner.
Right.
And that is all connected to the rules and regulations that have been pushed on the recreational prospector and or miner. The counties that are being affected here today are the most... The counties that are being affected are the most are also the counties with lots of recreational mining opportunities. Mm-hmm. The trickle-down effect is huge. Motels, gas stations, restaurants, and lastly, the mining stores. We are seeing customers in this state who also sell, other than mining equipment, rock and gem supplies, along with metal detectors who wish to prospect, with loads of regulations that are forcing them to fight for their rights in a courtroom, which the winners are usually the attorneys and special interest groups. We sell mining equipment, I also use the word recreational, to our dealers who sell to their customers, looking to either supplement their household income or just to make some memories for their children, or in my case, grandchildren, and soon to be great-grandchildren. Our state was built with miners along with loggers. Our state flag represents this in our activities. I have had correspondence with all of the other manufacturers who have said that they would be out of business or seriously handicapped if they had to rely on local sales in their states or also Oregon, which is why we have all gone beyond our borders to outside the U.S. And I can represent Keene Engineering in California, Proline out of California, Robert Dahlke in Washington, and Joby Wholesale. They've all expressed concerns and interest to this. And I can be reached at my email here, les@jobywholesale.com, and our corporate office is in Bend, Oregon. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Well, let's finish, and then we'll come back and ask all your questions.
Co-Chair Clam, Co-Chair Esquivel, my name's Robert Stumbo, and I'm the owner of Armadillo Mining Shop in Grants Pass, Oregon. I'm here today to express my concerns about what's happening in the mining industry, the opportunities that are there for the local people and the state are being completely ignored Oregon is facing severe financial times, and the solution is right under our feet. We have literally billions of dollars in valuable minerals buried in the ground here in southern and southwestern Oregon. Yet we're being stymied at every turn by our efforts to get these minerals from the ground. We face hazards from the federal and government, the agencies, the BLM, and the Forest Service, and now we're starting to face hazards from the state as well. Mining, of course, takes water, and water under the 1872 mining laws is granted to the miners and under the 1899 Oregon Water Legislative Act. And yet now our local water people are telling the miners they can't take any water or they're facing $10,000 fines. So we're kind of being assaulted on all sides, and I think that we need to work together to try to resolve some of these issues. Mining could be the savior of this state where timber is under such an assault. We have the minerals, as he's pointed out, of all these mines. These mines were closed, mostly the hard rock mines, right before World War II, because they said only mining critical to the war effort would be allowed. So some of these mines are extremely rich mines, yet when the people came back from the wars, if they came back, they never reopened these mines. So we have literally hundreds of millions of dollars sitting there waiting for us to go extract these minerals. Along with the gold and silver and chromium and other things we have down there, we also have tellurium in great quantities in some areas. Tellurium is one of the key components in solar panels. We have the largest solar panel industry right here in Oregon or in the country, and yet we're not developing these minerals. It could really help us. Mm-hmm. So my asking you, I guess, is if we could meet at some other time or if you can look into some of these things and help us. We're in dire straits. We're being assaulted from every side, and it's going to be devastating to Oregon if we lose our mineral industry too. Most people don't know it, but it does contribute well over $100 million a year to the economy in Oregon, and it could easily quadruple that without any problems. A lot over the last 100 years in the way we mine and the way we log and do other things, and so the environmental impacts from mining anymore are kept to a strict minimum. We don't go in and destroy rivers and streams. If you look at southern Oregon, we have the Rogue River, which was just nominated as one of our crown jewels. We have the Illinois River, and we've been mining on these rivers for almost 200 years, and yet they're calling them pristine and crown jewels and never to be bothered. So obviously our activities aren't being devastating to the environments. So I guess my plea to you people is please look at this stuff and see if you can help us in these areas. We're slowly being killed off, I guess, by rules and regulations that there's no science to back them up. I've gone to DEQ meetings all over the states, into California, and when asked what science they're using to regulate mining, they can't provide any to us. We've asked our congressmen and senators to the federal government, where's the science that you're proposing these things from? And we've never, ever received a single page of paper from them. Yet we can provide anyone on this committee with a stack of paper a foot high on studies and surveys done on mining and what it does to the environment that show that, in a lot of cases, it's favorable. So, any questions?
And you're just here to charm us with your gold nugget
them confidence.
Necklace. All right. Any questions for these folks? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it's not so much a question as perhaps as a comment. Looking through some of the, I assume this your documents you came out with information about Josephine County, but just looking at the statistics about this, and this probably could be replicated elsewhere in rural Oregon, but you know we're talking about a 14.4% unemployment rate. That's down from over 16% in 2010, thankfully. 19% of the county residents below the poverty level, over 28% of the county receiving food stamps.
Yes, sir. We're in dire straits. We're about to lose our county, actually.
over 40% of the households with children receiving public assistance. I mean, you know, this is kind of like, this isn't Appalachia. This is Oregon. You know, and I think more people in this state need to recognize what's going on out there. And you're obviously a long ways from some of the urban areas in Oregon where things look a little different than that. But
oh, yes.
Yet you're within our boundaries, and I think it's within our prerogative to do all that we can to ensure that
we would enjoy your help.
You know, as we try to define what is a sustainable model for Oregon's economy, I think we've got to look at natural resource production as being a key component in that. So I appreciate you guys being here today.
Representative Esquivel, or Co-Chair Esquivel.
Thank you. People that aren't from Southern Oregon or Eastern Oregon or rural Oregon, a lot of them don't understand what we do actually go through. The governor sat right where you're at and was talking about it is intolerable that we have a 9% unemployment rate in the state of Oregon. And I came back and told the governor we would be pleased to only have a 9% unemployment rate in Southern Oregon. It's unfortunate that we as a society in this state have allowed the minority of people to dictate the majority and for the betterment of the majority. Not only do you have minerals in the ground, but as my colleague from Happy Valley says, money grows on trees in this state and we ignore it.
Exactly.
And it's the only renewable natural resource we have is trees. And it's unfortunate, but we as a society need to dig in and figure out how to, one, I think I have an idea of how to stop these things like this 50-some thousand acres or whatever it is down there on the Rogue River, and I plan to initiate a bill in 2013 that would make it to where anyone that sets aside anything through an executive order and or through Congress has to have the permission of the state legislature. And we used to have this in law, but we advocated that back 20, 30 years ago. And it's unfortunate, but we need to grab hold of our own destiny and we need to take control of our own state again. So I commend you for what you're trying to do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I guess I don't thank you for coming all the way up here and testifying, and I guess I don't have any questions. I think if I started asking you questions, I would show you how much I don't know about mining. But with your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I guess this is kind of feels kind of like the tip of the iceberg for me. It's just a real frustration. Growing up as a kid, we had property on National Forest Service land. Yes, I did say that. It was a lease. It was something they did way back, and it was a primitive cabin. I grew up going there, and I loved it. And we had it because the creek, this was over in Eastern Oregon, the creek that was barely a creek that would flow by had some mining rights to it. And we had the mining rights to it. And we took our pans out 3-4 times a year. We were not serious miners. We weren't adding much to the local economy except the restaurants. We'd take our pans out and we'd mine for gold and we'd have a couple little flakes. Not much. It's worth more to keep than to do anything with. And it's probably fool's gold. But in that same forest, National Forest, over in Eastern Oregon, we were allowed to do that. And guess what else we did on those 20 acres? We maintained that creek. We took care of I'm only 46, so it's not that long ago. We took care of the landscape and things around there. Not that it was landscaped, it was very natural. Well, long story short, you can't be there anymore. You can't do that anymore. And I've been back, and it's sad. And what we were told, many of us are told, you can't use this resource, and I think we need to go back to the dictionary and look up the word resource. Mm-hmm. You can't use this resource. So what's happening? It's a dead forest. Mm-hmm. And it's just not much. And that wasn't caused by us. And it's just a real frustration, especially when we're talking private. It's just a real frustration that we've gotten to a point where you can't use it, you can't use it, and you can't use it. We would rather watch it rot and burn. And I'm sorry about that. It's just very frustrating, and I feel for you, and I'm really sorry that you're struggling with some of these issues.
Well, we're not giving up.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. You have a tough road to hoe, believe me. You mentioned that mineral that was on solar panels. There are going to be a whole bunch of nice people from urban Oregon that are on my side of the aisle. Democrats are going to go out there and buy a bunch of solar panels, put them on their house, and be really proud about how they're saving the earth. And God bless every one of them. But you know what? They can either get them minerals here from Oregon, where we have the strongest labor and environmental standards in the world, or they can get it from some third world country that don't give a hoot about their environment or their workers. And it's their choice. Same goes for their toilet paper, their gravel, and everything else. Everything else, their energy, everything. So they can either get it here in Oregon and put people to work that can take care of their children and their families and pay taxes so we can educate, medicate, and incarcerate, or they can get it somewhere where they don't care. So really, if they're thinking globally about the environment, they're going to help you and help the good people out there for us. But you guys, ma'am, that ain't happening. There's people that are gleeful in this building that are gleeful that you're going out of business, that you're losing your homes and your ranches and your woodlands. They're happy about it. The very same people that come into this building every day and have their hand out for more money for education, health care, and safety. The same people. So good luck to you. God bless you.
Thank you.
Anything else for this group? Thanks for making such a long trip up to spend time with us.
Privilege.
Yeah.
Thank you. Wait a minute. They're shorter distance than I am. And you never thank me.
You're getting paid a massive salary.
Oh, I forgot about that.
It's been $3 an hour to be here, bud.
We came from Ben this morning.
Co-chair.
Yeah. Representative Jensen.
I resent these short mileage people.
There you go.
Ace for Pendleton. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up. And we will move into our second informational session here on third-party energy certification standards and sort of the natural resource impacts.
I'll give you a lead-in, Chair.
Yeah, so I'm going to have our Vice Chair, Representative Johnson, brought this to us and have him talk a little bit about it, and then we'll bring up the folks from the industries.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. This issue about third-party energy certification standards, I think, first came to my attention a couple years ago in my home county in Hood River County. We were building out a facilities bond within our school district, and we were doing all sorts of energy upgrades to try to make our buildings more efficient and better use of our taxpayer money and so forth. And but we even had the idea of trying to create one of our projects to be as energy efficient as possible. And we elected to build what they call a net zero building. One of the additions in our district is actually qualifies for net zero, meaning it doesn't consume more energy than it actually takes in. So it's net zero. There's no net energy being consumed by that building. But in working with the architects on what the design would need to look like and what would need to become a part of that building in order to qualify for net zero, I began to learn a lot about the LEED code. Okay, this is one of the energy certification standards that you're going to hear a lot about today. And it's a point-based code for putting in certain energy efficiency measures and certain livability measures and so forth and so on, depending on what type of materials you use. You all get points for doing that.
Can you email?
And I begin to ask questions of the architect about why are we determining we want to tear off the existing roof on this. We were part of the project involved replacing an existing building with a new building. Rather than just going in and simply demolishing the old building, hauling it away, and putting up a new structure, the architects wanted to take the building apart piece by piece, take those materials over here, and then use those to reassemble the roof truss system in this building. And I said, you know, boy, that seems like it's going to take a lot of time. I know it's going to take more money. Is that really a good use of taxpayer funds? And their answer was, well, yes, it is going to be more expensive. It is going to take longer, but we will get points on the LEED scale for doing that because, see, LEED rewards recycling of used materials. So I began to look into that, specifically about how LEED addresses and talks about the use of wood. And LEED gives a few points for the use of wood in new commercial construction. One part of that is for recycled material. The other part is for new materials that might be used, new lumber products, in other words. But as I looked at that even further, it becomes even more restrictive because LEED only recognizes one lumber, one timber, one wood certification system standard, and it's called Forest Stewardship Council. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is that that is all fine and dandy for one of our third-party certification systems like LEED to do that. But the problem is that most of the wood fiber produced in Oregon is not FSC or Forest Stewardship Council certified. It's, we have other certification systems that most of our timberlands abide by. So with that as the lead-in, I'll turn it over to some of the folks. We've got some testimony here from OFIC, and I know that they will do a wonderful job. We also have Rich Engstrom here from OCAPA, who will also provide some good information, because what I like us, my point, Mr. Chair, in this hearing today would be just to take a look at how these third-party certification standards view the use of natural resources in their point systems, and more specifically, how might they affect Oregon's natural resource industry in either a positive or potentially a negative way. Because obviously the topic that we have so much in front of us today is about sustainability. And what does it mean to be, what's the new Oregon going to look like as we move into a sustainable future? And I think it's a very germane topic for us to be discussing about just what is going to be the face of sustainable Oregon, and what role are we going to allow as Oregonians, and more importantly, I think, as the legislature, to have our natural resources play in the new sustainable Oregon. So that would be the lead-in, Mr. Chair, so we can call our witnesses or whatever you'd like to do.
Okay, so Ward, do you want to come up first?
Well, Mr. Chair, one question. Are we going to have someone address this Forest Stewardship Council certification? Because that one really, I mean, is it like an APA stamp, or what is it?
I think it'll come out in their testimony today.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Very briefly, before anybody starts testifying, I just want to let you know I do have a commitment at 2:30. I'll have to leave. I don't want anybody to think it's to view that
whatever
as my
you
disinterest.
Were saying, yeah. Whoever's talking at 2:30, it's whatever you just said that made her get up and walk
that
out.
That would be
I want to make that perfectly clear.
You've really done it this time. I'm gaveling you down. Okay. Please, welcome.
Thank you. Chair Clement Escobar, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm Ward Hubble, president of the Green Building Initiative. I've got a brief statement. I've got a handout, and I'd be happy to answer questions. My organization is the exclusive licensee of Green Globes, which is an online green building assessment and certification system. Our primary competitor is the LEED rating system offered by the U.S. Green Building Council. Green Globes is an established and proven means of evaluating and improving the environmental performance of new, renovated, and existing commercial buildings. Green Globes delivers a comprehensive sustainability assessment through an interactive web-enabled platform. Operates a little bit like a TurboTax for green buildings, if you will. It results in greater ease of use, lower cost, and convenient evaluation of building performance over time. We offer what we believe is the most credible and comprehensive third-party certification process that exists today as well. In Green Globes, we look at seven key areas: energy, indoor environment, site, water, resources, emissions, and project management. So it includes energy, it's heavily weighted energy, but it's more comprehensive than just energy. By the end of this year, the Green Building Initiative will have certified 650 buildings nationwide, including nine right here in Oregon, ranging from the Head Start Center in Hermiston, to several signature Portland office buildings, to several hospitals owned by the Veterans Administration. Green Globes is used by major corporations, school districts, federal, state, and local governments, and higher education institutions. It has been incorporated into law as an equivalent standard to LEED in 23 states, including Oregon, as of last year, I understand. At the federal level, Green Globes is recognized as an equivalent standard to LEED by the U.S. Departments of Veterans Affairs, Interior, and Health and Human Services. The U.S. Navy and Army Corps of Engineers have broadened their LEED-only policies to allow for the use of Green Globes as well. In my view, Green Globes has been successful for three primary reasons. First, it's easier to use. It's web-enabled, it's interactive, it's a lot easier to use than LEED, which is primarily consist of a lot of forms, a lot of paperwork, things like that. All that's automated in Green Gloves. So we find that this appeals to a lot of real busy people who might otherwise not go through the process to evaluate their buildings because of the time involved. It also costs less, a lot less. Unlike LEED, you know, which many have found to be cost prohibitive, not because of the direct cost, but because of the indirect cost. There is a need often to employ a lot of consultants, and there's a lot of people time inside of organizations to go through the LEED process, and some people just decide not to do it for that reason, because it's very costly. It's not uncommon for LEED to cost more than twice what Green Gloves cost. Why? Because we automate a lot of that. All the consulting is basically baked into the software, so you don't have to go out and hire people to do that. Give you a quick example. Jim Mark, who runs Melvin Mark Development Portal, you probably know Jim, he commented to me once that when he used Green Gloves instead of LEED, he saved enough money so he could go buy a chiller for his building. Now, the chiller is a very expensive and important piece of equipment which dramatically increased his energy performance, reduced his carbon footprint, and really that's what it's all about. It's not about points on a rating system. It's not about a plaque on a wall. It's about saving energy and being more environmentally sustainable. And that, to me, is the best endorsement we've ever received. Green Gloves is also more flexible than other systems like LEED. Not all buildings and not all building situations are alike, and sometimes rating systems can cause people to do silly things for the sake of a point that really don't do anything for the performance of the building. In our business, it's called point chasing. A good example of that occurred in right outside of Vail, Colorado. The Summit County Recycling Center came to us after they realized that LEED was not going to really fit their building. And let me give you an example. If you're familiar with LEED at all, you know about that there's a credit for having a bike rack in your building, okay? You know about that.
Attached to your school building.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, you get credit for putting that bike rack in, but you also get penalized if you don't. Because there is a denominator of points in LEED, and if you don't get those points, they're held against you. Well, I've been to that recycling center, and I'm a cyclist, an avid cyclist myself, but this is not a place where you want to ride your bike. It sits at 10,000 feet on the top of a rocky knoll. There is a very narrow switchback trail that only dump trucks go up and down all day long, so riding your bike would not only be unpleasant, it would be unsafe. And the folks told me there, look, if we put a bike rack up there, the second thing we're going to do is put a big sign up here that says, don't ride your bikes anymore because you'll probably get killed. Now, under LEED, they would have gotten penalized for not doing it. In our system, we have what's called a non-applicable. So if you give us a good reason as to why it doesn't apply, we back those points out of your denominator so you're not going out and doing silly things just to get points. So that's another thing that people like about Green Gloves. Some of our customers include major corporations like Whole Foods. Whole Foods has decided to go completely Green Gloves, and they're doing it all over the country. Capital One, Fidelity Investments, Pfizer, Rubbermaid, Weyerhaeuser. Also federal agencies such as U.S. State Department, Veterans Affairs, and General Services Administration. As well as a lot of universities and nonprofits like the Clinton Presidential Library and Little Rock. They're all Green Gloves buildings. What I have found is that organizations that have a commitment to sustainability, that want to demonstrate that, have a lot of buildings and limited budgets, we're perfect for them. And so that's why we see a lot of traffic in those areas. So I appreciate the opportunity to come here and speak to you today, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Representative Johnson.
Ward, thank you for being here. Appreciate that. Could you talk about, I guess, specifically from the natural resource perspective and what types of wood or wood products you give credit or points for?
Well, the way that Green Gloves treats wood, they're like any building material, there are several ways that you can get evaluated. We don't evaluate the material per se, but here's what happens with wood. First, there are credits in our system for certified forestry. So if you use a certified forestry protocol like
SFI or even FSC, which is what's recognized by LEED or a couple of others, you get points for that. The difference between us and LEED is LEED recognizes one rating system. We recognize, I think, four,
okay.
The four major. The other ways that Wood gets point or Natural Resources gets point in I think, both LEED and Green Gloves is renewability, okay? In our system, domestic wood here in Oregon would get points for being renewable because it's renewable, right? In LEED, the only way to get those points is if you are a short rotation crop, okay? So trees aren't a short rotation crop. They're a long rotation crop. Bamboo, however, is a short rotation crop. The irony in that is that under that system, you're incentivized to use bamboo that might have gotten farmed in Thailand or someplace like that and shipped over here, as opposed to using domestic, you know, products. That's one of the differences. The other way that we look at building materials, we've got a local sourcing credit. So if you source materials within 500 miles of the building site or 1,500 miles if they're coming in by rail, there are a couple of points there. And then finally, we have a life cycle assessment calculator built inside of Green Gloves. And what that basically means, life cycle assessment, as you probably know, is the cradle-to-grave environmental impact of a building, of a material, whether it's wood or steel or plastic or whatever. And so it looks at things like energy consumption and carbon emissions and all that from the time you pull the natural resources from the environment to the time the product is manufactured, used, and disposed of. And so wood, steel, concrete, all those different building materials are evaluated based on a life cycle calculator. So to answer your question, there are several ways we look at building materials, and those are the ways.
I think it's just important to add that the state of Oregon, we do allow for tax credits for a certain degree of energy certification, and we have to get up to a LEED Platinum, but it's also equal to a Green Globes.
Four.
Green Globes? Four. Okay. So I think it's just important to recognize that as a state, we're giving tax credits to certain new construction and or retrofits that achieve a certain level of certification. So I guess my point would be, or one of the concerns that I have, is as we are giving out tax credits to these new projects in the interest of sustainability, which I think is great, I think it would also behoove us to ensure that those systems are as friendly to our Oregon-grown natural resources as can possibly be. So I think that's kind of the message that I'd like to at least have out on the table today.
Yep.
For us to consider.
Yep. And it makes sense because you use less energy and a lot of other things, good things happen when you source locally. Yeah.
You know, does LEED have a local sourcing?
I don't know for sure.
Benefit?
You'd have to ask them. I'm not quite sure.
Behind you. Okay. Anything else for Ward? We've got several more speakers, so we can probably summon you back up.
Okay.
Unless you have to get somewhere.
Okay.
Thank you. And then Link, Rich, and Tian Peng. Okay.
Wait, no, it's
not. She'll bring back.
You get a bonus.
Okay.
He's
got
the
bank. Yeah.
I mean, all of us.
Sorry. Yeah. Yes.
Mike didn't.
All four of you. Come on up.
For the record, let's show they're all.
Yeah. We'll see how long it lasts. Huh?
We'll start at the left. There's my right. Your left.
Yeah.
Representative Co-Chair Plam and Co-Chair Escobal and the rest of the committee.
Thank you for having us here today. I'm Mike Clossy with the Oregon Forest Resources Institute, and I'm responsible for three of the handouts that you have. This lovely little book called Oregon Forest Facts and Figures, an even lovelier book called The Environmental Benefits of Wood Products, and the kind of boring-looking letter from me. And I'm just going to go through the bullet points on the letter, and then that will mostly it's supported by the other materials. So first of all, it's really my pleasure to be here. My role is to talk about wood as a green building material, and I really believe it is, and I think you really believe it is, and this really was put together to show that, but I just want to tick off a few of the key points. First of all, it's renewable. It comes from managed forests, and we have a lot of those here in Oregon, about 15 million acres of public land and another 15 million acres of private land, so 30 million acres of renewable forests out there. Wood stores carbon in trees and in the wood products. 50% of the carbon that was in a tree when it's made into a board will be there for 100 years or longer. Wood has relatively low embodied energy. As Ward mentioned, when they do the life cycle analysis, there's an organization called Quorum, which is the Consortium for Research on Renewable Industrial Materials. This is a group of universities, including Oregon State University, University of Washington, University of Minnesota, and others. And they've looked at various types of building materials and done this life cycle assessment. And the two of the things that wood really stands out on is it has lower embodied energy, so it takes less energy to produce it, and it uses less water. So both of those are very, very important. And the embodied energy relates to the carbon, because the carbon that's stored in wood, we also have the benefit of being able to use wood residuals in the manufacturing process to make renewable energy. And using an alternative product, it usually takes energy, so we can be net positive on our energy. Wood is abundant in Oregon, as I said. Wood products come from sustainably managed forests. Link's going to mention the acreages, but it's most of the industrial forests in Oregon are certified, and many of the non-industrial forests are certified, and even the ones that aren't certified all meet the Oregon Forest Practices rules, which is more stringent than a lot of certification systems in other parts of the world. So I think you can safely say that wood harvested in Oregon, wood manufactured in Oregon, is from a sustainable forest. And my biggest thing is that wood is beautiful, and there's a lot of architects and engineers that are really starting to use it, and there's a couple of good examples here. This picture is from the Hallie Ford Center at OSU, and if you open it up to the last page, this is the library in Beaverton. And if you like to go to libraries, this is an incredible library. And TVA Architecture did it, and THA Architecture, and it's just an incredible building. And it really showcases the use of wood for both beauty and structure and sustainability. The architects and engineers have caught on. We've been doing a lot of work with OFRI and with others to put on things called the Wood Solutions Fair, and we have one scheduled in Portland on March 13th. We already have 300 architects and engineers signed up to come and spend a day learning about how to use wood, not just in residential, but in commercial and multifamily residential. And there's a lot of enthusiasm, and we're really excited about the progress we're making. So read the rest of it on your own, and I'll be ready for questions when you're ready to ask them. So thank you again for letting me be here today.
Clay? Thank you, Chair Clem, Chair Escobar, members of the committee. My name is Lincoln Cannon. I'm Director of Forest Taxation and Resources for the Oregon Forest Industries Council. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. You have my written comments along with a plethora of attachments that are kind of the support materials that that support the points I made in here. I'm not going to read this to you. I would like to read the first quote. The U.S. Forest Service has recently, last year, come out with a scientific study, science supporting the economic environmental benefits of using wood and wood products in green building construction. And Secretary Vilsack, in a press release, said wood should be a major component of American building and energy design. The use of wood provides substantial environmental benefits, provides incentives for private landowners to maintain forest land, and provides a critical source of jobs in rural Oregon. And I think that pretty well captures our interests in wood and its role in green building. I've cited some statistics there from McGraw-Hill's Construction Green Outlook for 2011. They've, from 2008 to 2010, the green building market has increased by 50% to $71 billion. It's forecasted to increase to $135 billion, so more than double, by 2015. So this is a large and growing segment of buildings, and they estimate up to from 40 to 48% of that new construction of new construction in the non-residential market will be green buildings. So in particular in non-residential, it's a huge growth opportunity, and Oregon Forest Products ought to be well positioned to participate in that. And so now I'll get to the point that's been brought up several times, the LEED and Green Globes and other certification systems and how they treat Oregon wood. Boy, this gets confusing fast, and it's entirely possible for me to misspeak, but to be clear, there are the green building rating systems, and there are the forest certification systems. The green building rating systems recognize forest certification systems and then they allow points for them, as Ward described. And so I wanted to just mention several. You've heard about LEED and Green Globes. There's also a National Green Building Standard, which is essentially a residential green building standard. And there is an International Green Construction Code that is currently under development and is expected to be put out this year, I think, in the spring, that would be the basis. As Oregon now uses international building codes as the basis for their building codes, the thought is that the International Green Building Standard would be a basis for local jurisdictions to adopt as a basis for green building codes. The major forest certification, those are the green building systems. The major forest certification systems, you've heard about the Sustainable Forest Initiative, the American Tree Farm System. There's a Canadian Standards Association and the Forest Stewardship Council and a program for endorsement of forest certification. And FSC and the program for endorsement of forest certification are international standards. The American Tree Farm System is a U.S. standard, and it's used. It's the pathway for small woodland owners to obtain certification. And the Sustainable Forest Initiative is essentially a... It's a U.S. and Canadian program that large forest landowners use as an alternative to FSC. The problem with FSC is that it doesn't really work well in Western Oregon. It encourages plantations. It is an international standard. 90% of the FSC certified lands in the world are in other countries besides the United States of America. In Oregon, 87% of the certified forest lands are certified under either the Sustainable Forest Initiative or the American Tree Farm System, which leaves 13% certified under the FSC. That's some 500,000 acres under FSC, and of that, I know 400,000 is the Warm Springs Indian Reservation. So they account for the bulk of FSC land in Oregon. In the House Energy and Environment Committee, they heard testimony from Dennis Creel, who's the forest lands manager for Hampton Affiliates. And Hampton, on the milling side, that's the landowner side, 13% of the land is FSC certified. On the milling side, less than 0.5% of the lumber that comes out of Hampton's Oregon mills is FSC. All the rest of the certified lumber from Hampton's mills are either SFI or American Tree Farm System. So, to claim a LEED wood credit, and Ward kind of described to you how that would work, for an Oregon building, FSC would have to be imported, almost certainly. You can't find it in Oregon, and rather than you using Oregon-grown forest products. It makes little sense for the environment. It makes little sense for the economy. As a result of that, the wood credit has been one of the least utilized credits in the LEED system because, A, the FSC wood is hard to find, and B, if you can find it, it's expensive. So, the wood credit is not functional in the LEED system. No one uses it because they can't get the wood or they can't afford it. In contrast to that, you heard how Green Globes treats this. I would note just about the standards generally. Green Globes is the National Green Building Standard, which is the residential green building standard. Both have been through the ANSI, American National Standards Institute certification process. These are open consensus-based processes where interested parties get together and develop these national standards and these programs become accredited or recognized as national standards. And folks from all across the board, I think the attachment that Ward gave you had a listing of the folks who participated in their technical committees, and it includes steel and concrete and masonry and architects and green, 30 or 40 people, and there's only, by the way, only one wood guy in that in those 30 people on the technical committee. So we believe, and to kind of close out here, this is a lot of background. You're all familiar with how cool 4166, how quickly they forget. That was a bill that Representative Johnson introduced to address this issue. And we supported and continue to support the concept that forest certification, or excuse me, green building certification systems that don't recognize Oregon lumber as renewable building resource ought not to be encouraged in the state. In 2011, the governor of Maine issued an executive order that said basically we're not going to use LEED. All public buildings in Maine will be green building certified, but we're only going to use certification systems that equally recognize Sustainable Forest Initiative, American Tree Farm System, and the Forest Stewardship Council. And that sends it, that tells LEED that unless and until they're willing to move away from their FSC only stance, that in Maine the LEED system won't be used to certify public buildings. We believe that that's a serious problem, that most of Oregon's forest products don't qualify for certification under the LEED system. We feel that Oregon ought to follow that same path and encourage the use of green building certification systems that recognize Oregon's wood products. Thank you.
Great. Rich?
Yeah, thank you. Chair Clem, Chair Esquivel, Rich Angstrom, President of the Oregon Concrete Aggregate Producers Association. Just coming off a little bit of that cold, so I'm a little hoarse here yet today. I thought I'd try to back up just a little bit on this and try to capture it again a little differently, because this is a lot of detail that's coming at you on all of this. And I think it's, again, worth just going over a little bit about how we got to where we're at and what this discussion's about a little bit. Last session, and I believe that the House bill number was 3789, was the big sustainability bill that was passed last session. And what it did is it codified within statute these private programs, LEED, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, Green Globes, the REACH Code, and other programs that may be developed down the road. And with that, if buildings were built to any of those standards, they got a 35% tax break. The owner who wanted to build the building got a 35% tax break over a five-year period for qualifying for one of these particular programs. 35% is enough and of size that it moves the market, and so there's some discussion in the market now of what's fair. And you can see just in the last decade with the green movement, the green building movement, that the marketplace isn't just about standard fire codes and strength codes and earthquake codes anymore. Now it's about green codes and how we build buildings that are very energy efficient and also how the material that we're building them with, how it's grown and how it's harvested and all of those kinds of things. So with that, the market now with this new kind of overlay in this green energy movement is trying to find some equilibrium. And I think that's very important that you know that market forces are at work here. And we have tried, the legislature, you guys, have tried to influence the market by encouraging owners to build their buildings that are energy efficient and using sustainable products. That's a very good policy that you guys have come up with. The issue that we have is that while you do that, there's policies and things by sweeping in these codes that you may not fully appreciate how they affect the market. And I think the forestry members here have shown you one of their major concerns, and that's that SFI, which is wood grown in Oregon, is mostly SFI wood, is not taken accounted for in one of those particular programs. Now, with that said, it's also important to note that it is taken into account in one of the other programs, so owners can choose to do the other way. So with that said, the market is experiencing some fluctuation defining who the winners and losers are. But I did talk to the PCA folks nationally about how things are going with all of these programs and how wood and concrete and then steel buildings are faring. And what PCA, which is the Portland Cement Association, told me is that with all the projects that have been done, it just comes out a third of them have been wood, a third of them have been concrete, and a third of them have been steel. It's odd, but he said that's just the statistic. It's just coming out fairly even-handed. The one thing that we think is that this isn't so much about how it affects natural resources, because buildings are going to be built. They're going to be built out of one of our three products. Owners are going to make selections, and architects and engineers are going to make selections on that. And in fact, it might even be good for the economy, because there's a lot more that goes into these green buildings than just a normal construction building. A lot more technical material and operating systems and HVAC systems and all kinds of things I've heard about. And that is good for the economy. Enterprise has kind of filled the gap there. But the one thing is I think we do need to understand the assumptions that go within these programs. And the one thing I do also think, and we do support the forestry folks, that we would like lead to acknowledge that we grow trees differently than back east, and that we are more of a monoculture, and that they need to take into consideration how we do things out here. But we don't think that we should be throwing out lead because of that. We think that these programs should acknowledge certified building material as kind of a general overarching thing, and not just what forestry products, but if there's a steel certification program, if there's a concrete certification program that qualify, or forestry program, that all of those should be considered. And I said this in the last committee, and I really believe this, and I'm glad Link said this. Oregon's Forest Practices Act is one of the toughest in the nation. It far exceeds much of what the rest of the nation does. So does Oregon's reclamation land policy for our industry. It's tremendous what we have to go through compared to even my brethren in other states. They just think we're crazy out here what we make the gravel industry jump through to provide the rock for the concrete. And so with that would be kind of our solution, that it needs to be a more global fix. We do hear the our forestry partners on this, and that the winner, and I'm going to say it this way, and then I want to introduce Tian Pang from NRMCA, but many of you have been to various things that OCAP had done in the past, and we used to sport an OCAP shirt that winners of our rock race won, and it said, if it's not grown, it's mined. And that's our natural resources. All of us should be winners in how we proceed here. So with that, we thought, as we talked about this issue, that we would bring somebody that was involved kind of on the ground up with LEED. And it's my pleasure to introduce Tian Pang, who's seated right to my left here. He's currently the Senior Director of Sustainability Codes for the National Ready Mix Association. He's original committee member of the USGBC, U.S. Green Buildings Codes, LEED Homes document. That was the main document that came out on how to build the homes. He's a member, been a past member of the Washington State Building Codes Council, and he was a longtime employee of Weyerhaeuser and worked in their Quadrant Homes division, which is not as the forester, but as a builder. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over. This is a rare opportunity to have somebody that was on the ground floor in these programs that can talk about some of the policies and how these things were put together, and is going to be a useful tool for you guys as you engage on these discussions. Dan.
Thank you, Chair Clem, Escobar, and committee members. I have a prepared statement, but I'd be happy to answer any question. I think this will clarify a lot of the issues that we have concerns about. Tian Pang, as I said, with the National Ready Mix Concrete Association. Concrete is a local material. Local, because you can't ship concrete from far away, as you can imagine. And it's a vital, it plays a vital role in how we protect our natural resources in the structures we build. As the backbone to our infrastructure, it supports environmental strategies throughout the lifespan of a building or a structure, from material production to demolition. So it's a natural choice for sustainable construction. Concrete is a durable material with a long life. It has inherent energy properties along with thermal mass. It minimizes energy use through its reflective quality. That's a term called heat island effect. And with pervious concrete, it helps manage stormwater, so stormwater runoff. So as a product of our society that we use a lot of, the industry is also doing their part in reducing their environmental footprint. The resource stewardship throughout its supply chain includes the use of cement substitutes such as fly ash, that's a byproduct of coal energy production, use of alternative fuels, and recycling over 140 million tons of concrete annually. So cement is a key ingredient of concrete. It's the ingredient that binds all the materials to make concrete. And it's got a large carbon footprint, but it's also taken strides to reduce their impact by adopting new standards in 2004. And this one change for them reduced their CO2 emissions by 2.5 million tons, and that's equivalent to about 300,000 cars taken off the road. So our industry, the concrete industry, supports the use of sustainable rating systems like LEED or Green Globes. Of the two, LEED has, as you have heard or know, fundamentally changed the marketplace. We believe the rating systems, both of them, are generally fair to all materials in that they focus more on building operations than product manufacturing. I'll explain this in a second. This is the correct approach in our mind. Product manufacturing only accounts for 5 to 8% of the global warming impacts for buildings throughout its life. Research from MIT, Berkeley, and others have made it clear that building operations, that's the energy for cooling and heating a building, throughout its life accounts for 92 to 95% of the global warming potential. And so for LEED, for instance, which is my area of expertise, there's 35 points available for energy and atmosphere and 14 for materials. So it's weighted for energy, as is Green Globes. So if the state of Oregon is interested in reducing its greenhouse emissions, then LEED got it right by considering the whole building, the whole life cycle of building, while not explicitly incorporating the life cycle assessment that was talked about previously, as Green Globes has done. So you heard what life cycle assessments are, and it looks at impacts throughout the whole life of a building, from extraction materials to distribution to manufacturing, construction, and then disposal or recycling. And so LEED is essentially a surrogate for life cycle assessments. You're looking at all stages in the LEED document. You know, it looks at where it comes from, it looks like recycled content, and it looks at how you operate through its energy. So each phase is addressed. And while concrete is a versatile material that can contribute to many of the LEED categories, we support the use of these third-party rating systems to raise the ceiling of green building. That is an aspirational or reach code for tax credit reasons, for instance, as opposed to looking at it to mandate raising the floor of green building, which is a baseline requirement. And so this can be achieved through other means, like the International Green Construction Code, which was written for that purpose. The language is in mandatory language. LEED, just for clarification, is not a code. It's a voluntary rating system. So it's voluntary, and it's flexible in that what you can choose or not choose in the system, a bike rack or not, to achieve gold or silver, whatever. So I believe that the Oregon State Bill last year already adopted the energy provision for the IGCC in terms of achieving the tax credit. So my final comment is that you heard about the timber industry, forestry industry's interest in Green Globes clearly over LEED preference-wise, simply a lot because the Green Globes adopts the all major mainstream forest certification systems, while LEED references only FSC. But we feel that this overshadows an important deficiency in the rating systems. In terms of equity for all materials, LEED is, wood is the only material that gets its own credit, its own point in LEED. There is no certified concrete credit. There's no certified steel or asphalt credit. So in fact, we would argue that LEED is more unfair to other materials. So as my partner had said, having it be revised to call certified building products, providing credits to all building materials is probably the best way to go to in terms of equity. For instance, the NRMCA has a sustainable concrete plant certification that is very rigorous and is third-party certified and is responsible to help designers make product selection. So that would be my end. So I'd be happy to answer any questions regarding wood, concrete, LEED.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you for everything. Oh, wait, Mark's going to go.
Oh,
forgive me.
Sorry about that. I didn't know. I knew I was calling him up next. I didn't notice he had gotten in there.
Mr. Co-Chair, Co-Chair Escobar, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson. I represent the Oregon Mills Industry Council. After listening to this panel talk about certification, I want to certify to you I am the dumbest one up here. I'm sorry, Tom Zelenka of Schnitzer Steel was going to be here today, and he couldn't. He was called out of town. He knows this material far better than I do. But he and I want and the council want to commit to your interim process as we try to find an equitable process here for identifying all materials and coming up with a rating system that will work for everybody and where we're all winners and we don't have winners and losers and we're not beating up on each other, that we're together. And so we're committed to that, and that's really my message today. And I wish Tom was here, but he will participate, or Jennifer, in the future on this process. Thank you.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. I can't speak intelligently to all these certification models either. I know we're going in that direction to be efficient and use our energy as wisely as possible and as little as possible, not just to say, you know, save the earth, but to save money. But, you know, you said it would be stupid to import some concrete. Yeah, it would be. It would be really stupid. It would be really stupid. But this state imports logs, unbelievably stupid, and we import gravel. We have the best tree stands in the world and some of the greatest gravel deposits on the planet. Yet this, we stupidly, irresponsibly, foolishly, short-sightedly import both those materials, and it's ridiculous. And at the expense of working families and our ability to provide them with services. Now, I just wanted to share that. I don't think anybody's heard me say anything like that before.
Ever.
Ever. We'll write it down.
Yeah,
never. Chair Clem, Chair Escobar, Representative Schaffler, the only thing I would say is one of the policy pieces I think there's some agreement on that we think that the legislature should consider heavily is that product selection within a certain distance to where the building's built makes some sense from both an energy efficient carbon footprint and all kinds of things of that nature. And it seems to make a lot of sense, the 350 miles, which LEED, I think, used to have, 500 miles, and, you know, to favor those kinds of products. You know, we have to be careful on commerce-related issues when you start talking that. Because they're very sensitive about, you know, the interstate competition issues. But this is one way to encourage and the benefits to all Oregon or with at least people within 500 miles. It could be Washington or Idaho, depending on where the project is, to encourage product selection that's more local like that. And that's one of the things I hope doesn't get lost in this green debate, because that's one of those policy considerations I think is, should squarely be in front of the legislature as they talk about green building issues. There's other ones, but that's a big one for me.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions, I guess, and comments. Mr. Pang, right?
Yes.
You were talking about perhaps LEED, or I guess for that matter, Green Globes as well, or the other certification standards, giving credit for instance, concrete, recognizing it as a energy efficient, sustainable, resource, talking about the same thing with steel and so forth, as it, does give some, explicitly calls out some wood products and so forth. On the one hand, I agree with you on the one hand. On the other hand, could that or would that possibly open up the door for some other third-party agency beginning to tell you all how to produce your products in a way that maybe you don't want to have them tell you? I mean, that would be my other concern with that, would be micromanaging how the product, the manufacturer, the production of the cement, first of all, you talk about it not being a very, having a high carbon footprint perhaps in that process. And as you talk about the energy usage on the steel side, we know how some people, or adverse to how certain industries use power. We've heard them talk about the Google plants and so forth out in the eastern part of the state where they're there because energy rates are low. There's some people think they shouldn't be there because they're using up too much power, that kind of thing. So my only question would be, on the one hand, I think there's some value in that, but on the other hand, are you concerned that it can open up the door to have other third-party agencies from outside of Oregon come in here and have exerted perhaps not a very friendly influence in your business?
Yes, thank you for the question. I think to be fair, if it's, it's happening with wood, so things don't change unless people tell you that you're doing something bad. And I think we've seen, in fact, that the concrete industry and the cement industry has gotten the NGOs on their back to say, hey, you guys can improve it. Only really in that case have they, have our industry have improved. So it's not always a bad thing to have other people tell you to look at your processes. So I'll leave it at that. And I think it should be equally weighted with wood having its own credit in LEED, for instance, while concrete and steel and asphalt do not have those. And we equally have certifications in our industry as well.
Okay. One more follow-up. Link, you referenced the executive order from the state of Maine, which I think is a good thing for us to recognize because, this is not an issue that only Oregon is talking about. Other states are grappling with this as well because this whole sustainability, green buildings initiative and movement is swept across the country. And I think states have done some things, I think, in perhaps a reactive fashion rather than maybe a well-thought-out fashion. And I'm glad you referenced that because, the state of Maine basically said that, LEED can be used in these public projects, but only if it recognizes all wood standards, certification standards equally. And that's really all the wood products people are asking for, right? You're not saying don't use the other guys. You're saying let us all play on the same level playing field. And I think that that's the message that I think you're trying to get through today.
Representative Johnson, yes, thank you for that question. I would note, and there is in that book full of information I gave you that I don't expect you to read, there is an article from Chris Knowles and someone else at the Wood Innovation Center at Oregon State that are experts on this stuff, and their comment in their article is these are Green Globes and LEED are 85% overlapping, and there's 15% difference. So they are really energy efficiency. They do focus really on energy use and other things. So what we're talking about is part of that 15% and how wood is treated in the renewable materials section. So with that said, we're not anti-LEED, we're not anti-FSC. Right. We believe all these green building systems have a place. Right. All these certification systems, forest certification systems are valid. We just don't agree that a green building system ought to discriminate against the certification systems that are used in the United States generally. It's not just Oregon. I mean, SFI and ATFS are the major certification systems in the U.S.
It's going to make me stand up.
I used the little Google machine up here, and I noticed that there's a debate going on at LEED 2012 now, and the SFC is like running ads whining about potential encroachment into their monopoly position.
Exactly.
That's not a question, I guess. That's
Well, and Mr. Chair, it is, and he probably knows more about it than I do, but it is, they are going through a revision process. They've had several public comment periods, and they're getting to where they're going to wrap up their 2012 revision, and at least at this point, the membership has not voted to change their FSC policy.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions for this group?
Just a comment. I would just say I'm excited and gratified to see all three of our major natural resource industries up here at the table advocating for the same cause. I think it's great.
There's the Farm Bureau. If they grow something, you can build something out of a corn stalk.
The hemp people aren't here yet.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say goodbye to Vice Chair Cowan. It's just her last committee meeting with us. Gene, I know you enjoyed your time with us greatly, and me particularly. It was nice serving with you.
We shall miss you.
We shall miss you greatly.
Already.
All right. Thank you all.
Thank you.